the week that was on the Mayo Football Podcast, and another week packed full of content. It doesn't stop. We have a team into the All-Ireland semi-finals, Mayo Ladies delivering an epic victory over Galway, one of the best finishes to a Mayo Ladies match. 4 years, John Gunnigan, that is among the highlights we have for our listeners today.
Yeah, what a highlight it was, Rob. 4 seconds when I look back on the TV coverage left on the clock when Sean Howley fisted over the winner. But it certainly was a grandstand finish to that game, wasn't it? And the really interesting thing, Rob, was when we're out on the pitch chatting to them both afterwards, and I asked both Kieran Needham and Sean Howley, were they aware that the time was up? And they both confirmed they were. And Sean furthermore said they had actually planned for it. It was kind of dagger to the heart moment, because really there was no coming back from that score. Hell of a win, and it sent us away from Pier Stadium with great big smiles on our faces, which was always good.
Yeah, we were on the pitch chatting to loads of the stars involved. The access was fantastic. We got those voices for you a little bit later in the podcast. In this show, though, John, for our listeners on our normal podcast free feed, who we're trying to convert over to patreon.com/Mayo Podcast. If you want more of this brilliant stuff, we do like to take people on a kind of a linear journey through the week. So we started the week with a well-titled show. I have to give it to the producer and the presenter, Mike Finnerty here, chatting with Edwin McGrail. The show must go on, they called it. And they covered a lot of ground because it was a lot of news between county board meetings, getting ready for the club championship, and plenty of stuff around the inter-county scene as well.
Oh yeah, it was a proper GAA weekly digest, wasn't it? I mean, there was a whole raft of topics covered by Ed and Mike, and they really got through the issues there. The two clips we're going to look at, I think, are of particular of interest to people, I would say. And obviously the first one is about emerging players. That's always a hot topic. That's always one that listeners like to hear of. So Ed talks at some length in relation to two names of interest there. And then we have something out of left field, which is the emergence of Mayo FC, the new soccer club within the county. And I think eyebrows were raised when Seamus Hughes, the chairman of Mayo FC, stated rather boldly that he felt that they could compete with Mayo GAA. So Ed puts that one into the grinder and has a good consideration of it, because obviously that does raise a lot of different issues, I think, compared to what we would have been speaking about before.
All right. Well, not for the first time in this pod, and you can expect lots more of this, but they took some time to look around the county, the club scene, the fringes of the senior squad, to see who might be next to kind of stick their head above ground and make a case to be in the senior starting lineups early next year. This is spliced out of that conversation segment where Edwin kicks out two players in particular that he's kind of curious about and looking forward to seeing how they develop.
The two guys, and one of them is in already, and one of them undoubtedly will be in, that I'd be looking to see develop and give Mayo options, for 2024, and more realistically, one other cases for beyond that, is Frank Irwin and Sean Moran. And I think Frank Irwin has the potential, and just didn't get a clean run at it from injury this year. He's the potential to be a foundation of Mayo's midfield for a good number of years. And in a sense, how he plays at club level, it's not irrelevant, but we've seen how good he can be at club level. It's an extended run injury-free with Mayo that we need to see how he is at that level, because it is a step up. And, you know, it can be erroneous sometimes to just assume that because a fella is playing well at club level that he's ready for inter-county. You're only ready for inter-county after you experience that level, and you experience it over a number of games. And Sean Moran, like last year was his first year out of minor, so he's still under 20. He's under 20 the following year as well, if my maths are right. But he's a real, real top talent. He can play anywhere in defence. He could be an option at six. He could be an option at wing back. He could be an option in the corner. But he's a guy as well. I'd like to see how he's developing, I suppose, from a physical point of view, because he is young, and you know, whether he's an option for 2024 or not, he might be a little bit on the young side. But Sam Callanan played in his, I suppose, in, when he was 19 last year, and Sean Moran, I think, has the ability. But I'm just curious to see him from a physical point of view. And look, after that, you know, other guys might stand up in games, but you're not just looking at how they perform in a game, because fellas can hit a rich vein of form, and that doesn't necessarily, you know, sustaining that is another day's work. So you're looking at how they may be performing that day, their physical and athletic makeup, maybe their previous form, maybe their you know, their personality and their self-belief and their ability to cope with the step up. So you're looking at a number of different factors. But yeah, I'd be interested to see how Frank Irwin and Sean Moran develop. They'd be the two guys I'd be looking out. And I don't think he's playing this weekend. Fintan Kelly from Davids is another guy who I've been impressed by, and I think has something to offer.
Continuing the link, because John set it up so well, let's go straight to the next link, which is that Mayo GA versus Mayo FC potential battle. It'll be a bit down the line, you might say, but it was interesting the angle Edwin took on this, which is kind of very much focused on the Mayo GA and the need perhaps to up their game in certain areas.
Yeah, it certainly has the potential to. There's a few strands to it. The first thing I'd say is John Corliss wrote an excellent piece there the week before last about, I suppose, how embryonic this whole thing is just now, and how much work needs to be done. I remember when Mayo under-20s, Mayo under-21s, it alternated. First set up in, I think, 2002. And I remember the first game was up in Galway near Ballybrit in a back pitch there. And it was very hard to get off the ground, and the numbers just didn't come to the games. And that's going to be a big challenge for Mayo FC. Soccer attendance numbers in the county are not great. They never particularly have been. So that's going to be a challenge. But it is an opportunity, like for young guys who have potential. And you should always find your level. So your level might be, if you're playing soccer, your level might be playing with Castlebar Celtic or Achill Rovers or Ballyhallinstown or Strathaan Foxford, or you might be a level above that. So this gives you the opportunity, and it could build towards something else. If it gets off the ground, there is going to be players who have potential to play, for instance, Mayo Minor, that might choose to go down this route and might focus on that, and, you know, could be lost to Mayo Minor. But that's fine. Like, that's just the way of the world, you know. And I think it's probably no harm as a reminder to Mayo GA that they kind of take access to the best and brightest talents in the county for granted, and that they have to make sure that they're providing adequately for them, and that they're looking after them, and that they, you know, that there's a bit of that the appeal of playing for Mayo. And I think that I think at the minute there can be no question that playing for Mayo Minors versus playing under 16 for Mayo Soccer, in terms of appeal and in terms of, I suppose, you know, the prestige, it's higher in GA than it is in soccer. But you know, that can change over time, and it depends on individuals. And you know, we've all seen guys who have been, you know, really good soccer players and not so good Gaelic, and vice versa. So you have to allow for that as well. But yeah, like it has the potential to be an impact, but I don't think it has the potential to be, you know, a huge setback either. You know, I think the two, if Mayo FC gets off the ground and does well, the two can coexist, like, you know. But it's just, again, a reminder of, you know, we've said for many times that Mayo GA have a clean run on, you know, talent in the county, and by and large they have. So it's no harm to just show that, yeah, you can't take that for granted.
An ideal sporting landscape is one that's open for all. You want young people, John, who are getting involved in sport, to be exposed to as many different types of sports as possible. And that's coming from a GA podcast here who, and we have no apologies about saying there's one specific interest for us, and that's Gaelic games in the County of Mayo. But at the same time, There are plenty of players involved in Mayo football right now who have had some superb experience in other sports. And I only need to pick one out just as an example. That's Ryan O'Donoghue, who was involved in Irish underage soccer, as we, as many of you will know. All of this adds to the development of a player. And, you know, it's all part of it. But at the same time, you want to make the case for why your particular sport, at the end of all that, is the one they should be focused on. So Edwin's on something there.
Oh, I think so, yeah. And I think from a societal point of view, I think more sport is always better, because you can claim that, you know, we will lose players to different codes. But I mean, statistically, it'll be shown you'll lose a way, way more players to apathy or even to injury as well. You know, lads and girls get injured in all manner of ways coming out of their late teens and early 20s. And many of them just can't physically play after that. So I think the challenge of other sports can often be overdone, I think, in that respect. And I do think certainly from a societal point of view, you know, as a parent as well, you want to see your kids being involved in a sport or sports. What that sport is usually a second order issue.
Yeah, it's giving players the chance to breed. It's the interactions between different coaches that concern me sometimes. It's scouts scouring the county to pick up players for other sports. Those kind of things that need to be regulated, not necessarily outlawed or anything like that, because, you know, you take an example of Oisín Mullen, and the general consensus is it's a great opportunity for him, and the general feeling in the county is now goodwill towards him and watching him closely down in Australia, wishing him all the best, as much as we have our own selfish interests. We're like, oh, I wish he was here, but sure, we wish Piers Hanley had stayed home as well, and yet we're all delighted that he had such a career. It's all part of it, John, but as long as it's done with the best interest of the individual person's wants and needs at heart, not the interest of an individual who might stand to gain from what decision that person makes.
Oh yeah, and that's it. And I mean, I guess with Mayo FC, we just have to see how it develops. It's going to start obviously at underage level first, and that will be of interest, I think, in terms of how the impact that it has there vis-a-vis, you know, lads and girls playing football currently.
Right, on to Austin O'Malley. We always love talking to Austin O'Malley. This is the first chance I had to talk to him for a little while. Really kind of a little bit more cerebral, because Edwin and Mike covered so much of the ground in terms of the news part. We got to do something more. It was more like your magazine section of the Sunday paper, John, rather than like the focus in news focus section. So with that in mind, my very first question was like, what do you think when people come up to you and say Mayo will never win in All-Ireland? That got him fired up. He dismissed that. He says, I can't even face that kind of commentary, that kind of negativity. But you liked his kind of follow-up to that as well, where he talked about the language involved. So maybe we'll play this clip and then you can hear from John why he picked it out.
Everybody needs to be careful in terms of maybe even the language we use after losses and that, and even as maybe as a county when we analyse stuff. And, you know, just, I suppose it's something that I've, you know, more so, even since you step back from play, and probably something in my own role as a performance coach as well, it's always interesting to see the fallout after a victory, after the defeat, and to maybe even analyse the language that's used around a defeat. And I think in the last number of years, like, you know, the words that are used around defeats, like thumpings and hammerings and, you know, disgraces and all of this, I find that, and I think it needs to be maybe challenged a bit more, but I sometimes find that very hard, maybe from my own, you know, you're internally maybe working with teams and you understand all the variables that need to come together within a performance to get a result or so on. And at any given day, you know, if one or two things are just out, it can affect the end result. And then, you know, you might get a headline that suggests, you know, everything is wrong. You know, we'll never do this. So, yeah, I do. That's one area of definitely of interest to me, you know, at the moment, even reading some of the stuff that maybe has fallen out from the Mayo game in the last number of weeks as well, you know.
Austin, as articulate as ever, and he certainly has some strong opinions about how we should kind of think through what we're saying around the inter-county game or as supporters around the teams we love.
Yeah, I thought that this one was particularly interesting because I think there are different perspectives involved here, and he's obviously coming at this from the perspective, obviously, as a former player, as a club manager up here in Dublin, but and also as a member of the Mayo Ladies backroom team. So I guess in that sense, from being inside the camp and the message that would percolate into the camp from supporters and the general public about players' performances. And I guess at one level, I think I'd be absolutely on the page with them. And that's kind of the battle I fight all the time on the blog is keeping commentary, very simply what I would say, fair and reasonable. People can tend to get overexcited. But, you know, at the same time, you would also say that it's in the nature of supporters to get excited, because that's why we're interested in going to the games, in that it's a pursuit that does excite us and we find it very, very enjoyable. And I think because of that, we're given to throwing out superlatives, and they can be either positive superlatives or negatives. And, you know, my bugbear, Rob, is that, you know, we can't look at anyone good now and say, oh God, he or she is very good. They have to be the best ever, you know. And I very much push back against that kind of superlative, because, you know, we only have a finite view in terms of how good or how bad, or in terms of how good somebody is with reference to everyone else that went before, you know. I still think one of the best forwards I've ever seen of all time was in a wheelchair at 25, and that was Matt Connor. I thought he was absolutely sensational, and I always wonder, you know, what it would have been like if he had a whole career. Obviously, everybody today says David Clifford is the best of all time. Maybe he will be. Maybe he will be when he hangs up his boots. But Jesus, give the lad a chance. He's what, 23?
Also, John, like, Matt Connor played most of his football in front of 100 people at club level because of the way Gaelic football was in those days. It's a different world now, the amount of television exposure and the amount of literal championship games a David Clifford, for example, gets. So you can sit on a Sunday afternoon 2 months ago and watch him run rings around Clare defenders in the most spectacular way. But it's just a different scene than what we were talking about back then. So I suppose I agree with you. That said, David Clifford is the best player I've ever seen of all time.
Move on.
Okay, enough of that. Moving on to a different sport, not at all. A different perspective on Gaelic games. The Mayo Ladies in action in the last, as we talked, the last 48 hours. But before they took to the field, Austin O'Malley, who is part of the backroom team and helping them in terms of high performance and getting the best out of themselves individually and collectively. It was really interesting just to ask him about equality, because it's become such a major hot topic with the protests that are ongoing for ladies GA and looking for that much better level of equality between men's and ladies sport. Men's and women's sport, even the term ladies GA does feel a little bit archaic at times. Here's Austin O'Malley on that very topic.
No, it doesn't. And it's, you know, it's something I've thought probably long and hard about even before I started working with I'd obviously have worked with one-to-one female athletes and one-to-one, you know, in different sectors and that. But, you know, before I got involved with the Mayo Ladies, it was something I was looking in thinking, you know, and it was something that I genuinely say it rancored me. You know, just being observing, I suppose, the variance in standards between, you know, just within GA, even between male and female, what they were given, the way they were treated, you know, on the very basic things like what they've obviously said, expenses, food after training, having a doctor at training, all the things that you just take for granted in this era. To think that they still have to feel in some ways, you know, that they have to put extra energy or go sort of bended knee and want and ask for these things. So it is frustrating. And when you see, and you know, from my own perspective, being involved in the ladies, when you see the time, the effort, the attention that these girls put in, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible when you see it, and when you think that the playing field isn't level, and you look across, it's just not right, and it needs to change. And please God, and hopefully it will. So I fully support and endorse in terms of what they're looking for at the moment, and in terms of what they're trying to do.
Yeah, you picked that out for a good reason, John. You felt it kind of neatly showcase things in the lead into what was a very visceral and very visible collective show of support for each other in terms of the Mayo and Galway teams lining up together before the game the last night.
Yeah, I thought it was a very profound and quite dignified protest as well. I think they did their work very, very well. Like, I think it was so striking to see both teams warming up with the same white jersey on them, and then the way they lined up together for the national anthem with the players interleaved between the two counties. I thought that was extremely powerful, and the way they all jogged off together effectively in the same strip was that was a very, very powerful visible message. And also the ref there, you know, hopping from one foot to the other, tooting impatiently on his whistle, whereas they were obviously going to leave at the 5 minutes, because that was part of the plan, clearly, because the thing was televised. So they wanted to make sure that the protest did register nationally, and I'm sure it did. It's a very effective campaign, you'd have to say, and fair play to them. I think they're all doing very well. And one bit of audio that we don't get, because we wanted to concentrate on the women themselves, obviously, in relation to the match, but there is one bit of audio that club members on Patreon will already have heard, and that was Michael Moyles, where he was talking about the protest and very much like Austin was supporting it. But he made the point, which I didn't appreciate at all, is that in Mayo the players are well catered for, and they recognise that, but their part of the protest is very, very much in solidarity towards players from other counties who aren't being catered for in the same way. Now, that's not to say that everything is perfect for Mayo players. Clearly it isn't. They don't get their mileage and all that kind of thing, and there's a hell of a lot more that could be done all across the board. But in terms of the relative position of Mayo versus other counties, we're certainly not at the back of the queue, and it's worth pointing that out.
Yeah, I used to say that too when people maybe in smaller counties in Leinster were moaning about the imbalance in Leinster GA. I might have used Mayo as an example. I used to say to people, well, if you look at Mayo's backroom team, it was pretty big over the last 10 or 12 years. You know, there's been a lot of money invested in Mayo as well. So it's that balance and it's that fairness across the board that you have to look for sometimes. And I think that is as much as what a lot of this is about as anything else. So certainly in terms of women's sport, the GA will hopefully start to turn a corner off the back of this, and more power to them. I think they're getting a huge support. John, we enjoyed every second of covering the games the last day, because first of all, it's just great to have an inter-county women's team representing Mayo so, so well in the last eight of the senior championship. And secondly, my God, what a win.
Oh yeah, and a win against the Head, I think you'd have to say, because they were under severe pressure for a lot of that game, particularly in the second half, when the wind was blowing as reliably as it ever does in Pier Stadium, and Mayo went in at halftime just a point ahead, having played with that strong wind, so they were always going to be under the cosh in the second half. But I thought they played the game very cleverly. And even though Galway will regret, a bit like Derry yesterday, they'll regret the chances they left behind them. They did leave us in the game. And as I think I said on the final whistle pod afterwards, this Mayo team is a very, very dangerous team if you leave them in the game. And we proved that at the end.
Two very disappointed, but very gracious and defeat Galway supporters were in front of us. But like, what I loved about it is there was no moaning about decisions from the referee or anything like that. It's just we left it behind us. We didn't take our chances, and I think that's always good to hear, because that's unfortunately the way Galway have to look at it. For Mayo, there's more in them, John, which is exciting as well. Look, let's be honest. You look at Cork and Dublin and what they've done over the last decade of stuff on one side of the draw. You look at Kerry and what people feel is coming with that group on the other side of the draw, and having beaten Mayo in semi-final last year as well. Mayo are outsiders, but sure, look at not new there.
Oh yeah. I mean, Kerry looked to be the coming team, and you know, having dethroned me, the back-to-back champions, I think they'll be very much everyone's fancy to go on and finish the business. So it's a big match for us. They beat us last year. They beat us with goals last year, and so I mean, that's got to be a focus for us in 2 weeks' time in terms of keeping a clean sheet, if at all possible. But look, at it's the last four again. This is the third year in a row that Mayo have reached the semi-finals in the LGFA All-Ireland Championship. So, you know, we're in the conversation for a national title, and that's always great.
Here's some voices from the day. I'll list them out for you. Catherine Sullivan, the captain, you're going to hear first of all. Kieran Needham, who set up the winning point with the amazing break, talking about what she saw when she did turn over that ball. Really good couple of seconds there from Kira. Then you're going to hear from Shauna Howley, who maybe someone would have been surprised at the start, but by God, she had a good impact. She was, of course, the one on the shoulder of Kira there to tap over the winning score. And last, but most certainly not least, Noreen Bourne chatting with Mike Finnerty, specifically when she pops in here, speaking about her Westport clubmate, Aoife Geraghty, who played such a brilliant role in midfield, and her performance might have surprised some nationally, but certainly didn't surprise anyone involved in Westport Ladies GA. So enjoy these voices.
I'm just over the moon, so proud of the girls. We fully, you know, we've worked like absolute dogs, and we fully deserve to be in the semi-final. I'm just delighted for everyone.
Explain to me how a game like this plays out like that in those closing stages. So many chances to maybe create a score, you didn't, and then the score comes from a turnover out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was they were saying before the game it was a strong win, but I don't think the wind impacted either team there in either halves. Both teams, you know, we went quite defensively at times, and it was, I suppose, about keeping ball and about that other player intercepting, and that's what got us going there in the last minute or so. Yeah, look, I'm lost for words. I'm just delighted to be in a semi-final here now after that.
Kieran Needham's with me. Kieran, the first question that anyone's going to ask you all day long is, how tired were you after that break down the field?
Oh my God, I was absolutely wrecked. I don't know, I looked up and it was just green grass. But the girls got up behind me, so yeah, we finished it off with a score, so that's the main thing.
This is awful detail, but you were fouled, but you kept playing because you wanted to see if you could get the point out of the play.
Yeah, I seen Shauna Howley just off me, so I just dribbled it around the ground to her. I don't know what sort of pass it was, but oh gee, she hand passed it over, and the sister is buzz.
Absolutely, and to be fair, it's all Kieran Needham. She made the hard turnover, she made that hard run. Thought we had gotten her free and it was good enough, but just played. I suppose it's one thing Padraig Gardner has drilled into us this year is just to get ahead of the ball. So the minute I saw Kira get the turnover, I just pumped the legs and tried to get ahead, and thankfully she laid it off and it went over the bar.
I love the psychology of your second half. You really pushed up. You didn't go, okay, it's the wind, let's build a wall. You wanted to, well, you built a wall, but you wanted to build it right up the field.
I suppose we're in the All-Ireland quarter stages now, that like you have nothing to lose, you have to push up. Probably didn't utilise the breeze as much as we wanted in the first half. It was tit for tat, it was a bit like ping pong today, so we knew possession was key. So yeah, I suppose they got us in bin too, so we said it was our chance to push up. Probably didn't get the lead we wanted to, but as long as we kept the scoreboard ticking over and just keeping it at a level to 1 point game, it's all that matters. I suppose we're so used to playing Galway now at this stage, it's, you know, sometimes they get the better of us, we get the better of them, but I think today just showed that there's nothing between the two teams and it just comes down right literally to the wire.
Noreen, just to finish up and to go back to the game, I saw Aoife Geraghty picking up the TG Cahir Player of the Match award as a fellow Westport woman. I'm sure you're delighted. Westport ladies football on the up, and Aoife Geraghty, you know, very much the face of that, isn't she?
Oh, absolutely. Herself and Saoirse are huge factors now in the club. Aoife has been in the senior team now. I think this is her second or third year, and she has kind of been a bit of a quiet Trojan. She just works along in the background, very modest, very underrated. She'd kind of do a lot of background work, even chatting to her often, she'd be hesitant to tell you she's playing well, but I've watched her for years, Mike, and the way she just drives through attacks, she is ferocious. She's definitely a one to watch, and you know, you'd be watching her name in lights no more than Saoirse. 18, 19, 20 years of age, these girls, and they're performing here outstanding against the county, so it'll be a huge addition back to us when we get them back to Westport ladies again.
Yeah, Westport in the shake-up for a county title, I'm sure. Noreen Moran, thanks a million, well done on Midwest, and we might see you in the semi-final.
Okay, that was the voice of Noreen Moran. Before her, Shauna Howley. Before that, of course, Kieran Needham, and who made that brilliant break to set up Shauna for the winning score. And at the very beginning of that little segment, you heard from Catherine Sullivan. Lots more audio, because we got about 20 minutes of it, about five or six interviews on the pitch. Because we went down onto the pitch, John. Friends and family and supporters, the loyalist of Mayo followers are the ladies' GA followers. Half the time, they're going to games like the Armagh match, which was on the exact same time on the same day as Mayo Galway, when the entire Gaelic football supporting county were in Pier Stadium, it seems. So with that in mind, delighted for them. But in that atmosphere, a very open kind of reaction from the Mayo management. Off you go, chat to who you want to. And we were really grateful.
Yeah, no, it was great, wasn't it? And I mean, we could have spoken to the whole team there. And obviously club members will have heard audio as well from Rachel Kearns and from Sinead Caffrey as well. But it was great. It was really great to get such access to the players and to be able to hear at first hand just after the match was over, how the players themselves had experienced those dramatic final moments. So yeah, so I think we're very, very pleased with that Final Whistle podcast, because I think we really got a very, very good representation of the atmosphere as we saw it and as the players experienced it. So yeah, so that was all really good.
When we're much older, I hope this is the case, that we'll be talking about the days we used to be able to park up at the ground for an All-Ireland quarterfinal, just walk in and get a seat in the middle of the stand, and we'll be laughing about it, because hopefully you'll be talking in the thousands, and maybe not so long down into the future, tens of thousands for quarterfinals. We know they get monster crowds for the All-Ireland finals, and a lot of walk-up neutrals, as you were one of them last year for the Kerry Meath match, John. But we want to see lots more of that in the earlier rounds too.
Yeah, though you're wishing upon everyone then, Rob, the traffic horrors that that we get at the men's game. But I tell you, there's one thing that won't be different, and that's the way the wind blows in at Salt Hill. You know, whether there's one person there or whether there's 40,000 people there, you're going to have the wind.
Yeah. If the world is overheating, I think Pierce Stadium is safe for many a century. All right, enough of that. Patreon.com/Mayo Podcast. That's where you get us. What is Patreon? It's an app for your phone. You can download it, or you can log on a web browser and find Patreon.com. When you're in there, you just search for the Mayo Podcast. And in there is where you're going to find how to sign up. €5 per month plus VAT, a little bit extra, couple of cups of coffee. And you get all of these every week. These are just the three podcasts from last week. Massive interview coming up next week. We are going to follow the second captain's rule of not actually announcing who we have until the recording is in the bag. But you're going to like it. I guarantee you that. And lots more coverage, because, of course, leading into the following week, John, an All-Ireland semi-final to preview, which is nice to be able to say. We got Colm Boyle on with Mike Finnerty to look back at the weekend's All-Ireland football men's semi-finals. Plenty of action there to trawl over, and let's be honest, we're all a little bit insular in our own supporting way, so we certainly look through the prism of Mayo football and wonder, where do we fit into this picture? One thing's for sure, Monaghan and Derry certainly went down fighting this weekend.
They sure did, yeah. Two good semi-finals. Now, I saw more, obviously, of the Kerry-Derry game than I did of the first ones, but I have to say, they probably went much along the lines is what I was thinking. I didn't think Monaghan would have enough to stay with Dublin. I think they stayed with Dublin for a bit longer than I thought they would have, but I don't think that a result of that was ever really in doubt. But I do think Derry will have such enormous, huge regrets. They were the better team in the second half. There's no doubt about that. But they just lacked the composure coming down the closing stretch. They left that game behind them, I think, frankly. And I think they will have bitter regrets about it.
I will say this though, John. Kerry, you know, brought a few players off the bench against Mayo and Killarney, and you and I were there, and there was no real impact. Kerry brought a few players off the bench in this one, and there was a big impact. They also brought a steeliness. Whenever you think about different challenges along the way, they were hard. There's all that edge that Kerry bring to it. And then, you know, one of my favourite Kerry players in the current squad, Stephen O'Brien, just comes off the bench, and he just played such a key part. So, like, I have to say, I was massively impressed with Kerry. Despite the fact that I don't disagree with you one bit, I feel like Gary left that behind.
Yeah, no. I mean, they showed the greater composure in the last 10 minutes.
And belief, that's belief.
It. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, isn't it amazing what an All-Ireland win will do for you? You will have that belief. You won't panic. And this is their fourth All-Ireland semi-final in a row? So, and it's amazing actually how short all of our memories are, you know, because I remember going into the COVID semi-final. The debate about Kerry that time was that how they just absolutely could not be relied on in a close match to seal out a close win. And that was yet another example of it, if you like. Since then, since Jack O'Connor has come back, that's something, as well as sorting out their defence, that's something they've sorted out as well. They're winning those close games now. Like, they beat Dublin with that late free by Sean O'Shea last year, and they won a game yesterday which really, you know, you could argue they didn't deserve to win, but they did win it because they showed great resilience and composure in the vital moments.
Okay, by the time you hear from us again, we'll have lots more clips of audio, including some snippets of a show that's going out in around the same time as us releasing this to the free world. That's Colin Boyle and Mike Fritters you have in the chat. Plus, of course, we got early next week the All-Ireland semi-final. Tirla, Saturday, 29th of July. I think I've got that right, John.
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock, right. I'm not going to say it's live on TG Carr too loudly, because as much as they've been an amazing supporter of Women's GA, get yourself to Turles. You know, definitely record it on TG Carr and enjoy it afterwards. But yeah, it's going to be good. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I've got the buzz now, and hopefully they can upset the odds.
Yeah, it's a double header in Semple Stadium that evening. So our match throws in at 5, and the Dublin-Cork game throws in at 7:30. With both matches, as you say, live on TG Carr. But for sure, I think, as we were saying at the final whistle pod, this is the Mayo team that's left in the championship this year, and supporters need to recognise that, and they need to get behind them. And I think the team could really do with a big support down in Thurles on Saturday week.
All right, club members, you can listen to this, of course, and have if you've listened to it all the way through on the patreon.com feed. Tell as many people as you can to sign up to the podcast, spread the word. And if you haven't already signed up to the yearly subscription, you get that discount as well. So do that if you can. In the meantime, for the rest of you, you know what to do. Patreon.com/Mayo Podcast. That's where you'll find us. John, thanks very much.
Cheers, Rob. I'm just wondering, you know, if we were in an All-Ireland semi-final, if we were in an All-Ireland final, how would we find the time to do all these podcasts? You
know, we would.
It's what we do, Rob.
It's what we do. In the meantime, talk to you soon, folks.